Hi, this is Sandra Roscoe Wolf, a culture agent columnist for LB Post, and I'm here with
Richard Cooper, electronic music teacher and tech for Cal State Long Beach.
Excellent. Well, we're here to talk about a couple different things. We're going to talk about the circuit bending event that you're curating. Is that the right term?
Yeah, sure.
Why don't you tell me about that a little bit?
Well, okay. My friend... Is this going to work?
Go for it.
My friend Tom Koch is he's like a circuit bender. He's kind of a big deal in circuit bending. And he's also, he's associated with Negative Land. And that's, I met him through a mutual friend, but I've always been a big fan of Negative Land. And he does lighting, sound, video stuff for them. And so he and I started hanging out a little bit, and I found out he was really into circuit bending. And he makes these amazing objects. He's got a series that he did out of Teletubbies. They made these Teletubby dolls with TV sets in their stomach, and he went in and hacked them in all these different ways. He's got a whole series of Teletubby things, and he sells them not only as musical instruments, which he sold to several people, and they perform with them, but also as art objects. So anyway, he's really interested in that, and he and I are both, you know, rabid Eno fans. And so when I told him about the Brian Eno exhibit coming to Cal State Long Beach, he was very interested. And then the people at the museum who were putting the Eno thing together asked me for some ideas about other events that we could put on around the Eno exhibit. And I had mentioned circuit bending, and they were really interested. So I basically just hooked them up with Tom, and Tom planned the thing out, and he's connected to circuit benders from all over the country. And I'm the tech, basically, for the show. I'm going to make sure it all goes well, but he's pretty much the one coordinating.
Great. Now, for those listeners who aren't familiar with the concept, why don't you just sort of outline briefly what circuit bending is?
Okay, well, circuit bending is actually a fairly simple concept. You take an object, usually a toy, that makes sound, and you modify it in some way. Not software modification, but hardware. So you're actually getting inside and adding in resistors and capacitors and things where they didn't used to exist, or putting knobs in order to change the amount of electricity that's flowing to the thing that makes the sound, to modify it in some way. And the modifications are amazing. You take something like the classic one is the Speak and Spell, where you would, you know, push the button and it says the cow goes moo, and now you've given it not enough electricity, so it starts to stutter and slow down and sound like a horror film or something. And you can make them do rhythmic things. You can take drum boxes, things that have little drum loops in them, and make them really complicated. Just wonderful stuff. And then they perform with them live. So that's basically circuit bending.
Gotcha. But don't some people actually go in and actually pull out the chips that have the actual program information on it and swap those out with other ones?
Right, yeah, that you can do that as well. There's different levels of circuit bending. There's one level, the simplest one is where you open it up and you actually look at the circuits. And because most of these things are DC, they're not going to electrocute you. They're not full wall voltage.
Right.
So you can reach in and touch them. And by shorting out certain things with your fingers or with a set of alligator clips, you can find out which short circuits sound the most interesting. And then you can make that connection and put a knob in there to control it. So that's the basic one. And then you get more and more complicated. And the people who are doing our workshop, and it's October 10th is the circuit bending workshop, and then that evening is the concert. The circuit bending workshop is being run by Peter Edwards, and he's from Casper Electronics. And I guess what they do is they actually give you a chip. They supply, and then they show you how to modify it, how to hook electronics up to it, and then within 2 to 3 hours, you've created your own little instrument.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
That's totally fun.
And it's only $15.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah,
that's a very affordable circuit bending workshop.
Yeah, for $15, they give you all the supplies that you need, and they supply the tools as well.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
It's only open to 20 people, though, apparently, because they've got to
learn. So you have to sign up early.
Right.
How do people sign up?
You call 985-4384 in the 562 area code. That's the art museum. And that's how you sign up.
Well, I'll just delete that number from this interview, and then I'll call them myself.
Of course.
So, now, as far as the Eno show, one of the reasons why you were involved, aside from being a fan, is that you actually did your master's thesis, right?
Well, okay, there's a couple of things. a couple of things. First of all, many of the classes that I teach, I discuss Brian Eno's work. Specifically in the class that I'm teaching this semester, which is called Composition with Digital Media. And it's about using found sounds, basically, or found images or found video. It's compiling and collaging found objects. But I talk a lot about Eno in that context. And actually, I talk about Eno all the time just because I'm a fan. But I've got a lecture that I've already been giving for the last several years about Brian Eno. And when the museum found out about that, they asked me if I'd like to give the lecture for the students before Eno gets here so they can kind of have an idea of what they're going to see. And so that's how this all started. And since then, I've been reading. There's a new biography that's just come out called On Some Faraway Beach. It's a big biography of Brian Eno. And I'm going through that and adding stuff to it. So it should be interesting. And my lectures are sort of multimedia, because everything I do is multimedia. So, you know, there's images and sound and video that go along with it. And I'll be doing that in the University Art Museum, September 15th, from 12:15 to 1, which is not nearly enough time. And then I'm doing it again on October 24th, probably a longer, more full-featured version of the lecture.
Right on. So now... There's also a number of other components to this upcoming event, right? Were you involved at all with the Slow Sound Festival?
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
Actually, they were asking me for some other ideas on ways to kind of, you know, use this Brian Eno event as a way to communicate with the public. And I had suggested Soundwalk. And I got in touch with Shay from Soundwalk. And he had suggested that I talk to Glenn Bach. And now Glenn Bach has been this name that I've been hearing for years. He came from Cal State Long Beach, and he used to be the experimental music guy in Long Beach, I guess. That was like, he put on a series of concerts, little house concerts, and they're called Quiet, I believe. And he's just been an experimental music guy for a long time, and I kept hearing his name, but I'd never met him. So I made contact with him actually through Matt Pogue, who is the graphic designer for the music department at Cal State, who is good friends with him, and they used to be in bands together. So I started talking to Glenn, and he told me, in addition to Soundwalk, that he was also involved in this thing called Slow Sound that happened to be coinciding with the Eno exhibit. And so we sort of brought that in as well. And they're doing a couple of the events for Slow Sound at Cal State.
Right, at
the Daniels Recital Hall. Right.
And the lineup for that is actually pretty amazing.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I'm really happy to be a part of it myself, own small little way, but I'm really looking forward to going to some of the other shows.
Oh yeah, they look really good.
Yeah.
You know, I gotta tell you, we had a meeting at Portfolio, Glenn Bach and Shay, I'm blanking on Shay's last name.
Gower,
that's it. And we were talking about it, and we were realizing that we have the potential to sort of jumpstart a new experimental music scene in Long Beach, because there's enough people here who are interested in it, and it seems like it's time. So I think we're actually going to try to make that happen.
Well, you know, it's funny because one of the first shows that we did, maybe it was our second or third show in Einsofar. We did it open, and there was this young man opening for us. Whose name was Niall Morgan. And at the time, anyway, he was 15 and going to Wilson High School. And, you know, what he was doing was actually pretty interesting, and he obviously had really carefully thought it out, and we actually invited him to perform with us for our set. And I came to discover after that there's actually a little cadre of students at Wilson High School who have a little experimental music club.
Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah. So,
that's great.
I mean, it seems like what you're saying, like there's this constellation of energies that are kind of coalescing here, which is really exciting, you know, and I don't know if you know about Not Robot, Not Human. That's an experimental music event once a month at the Puka Bar, which is right around the corner from you, I think.
Yeah.
You know, there's stuff going on at Open all the time, and you know, there's a lot of things going on. So,
well, I think that there's been lots of little things happening, and like I've been, you know, sort of created my own little weird music empire at Cal State Long Beach, and then Shay with Open Books, and there's all these little things. And I think what we're going to try to do is sort of knit them all together, not in a really, you know, fascist organized way, but, you know, just sort of in a real loose coalition where we're all, you know, advertising each other's events.
Right. Well, I think, you know, that's a really great idea, because that's kind of what we were talking about last night to a certain extent, is finding ways to support each other mm-hmm. in the work we enjoy doing and in the work that we're engaged in, both as an audience and as creative individuals, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that we could all definitely benefit from and participate in. And also, you know, I think everybody sort of has this energy to do promotion, because that's what musicians do,
right?
You know, and if you give it some focus, if you give it some resources, even just collectively, you know, amongst each other,
yeah.
It can. I think that's a great idea. That's really exciting. So sign me up.
It's funny because it doesn't seem like it's going to take a whole big lot of effort. It seems like it's just something that's already just waiting to happen, and it just needs a couple of people just to sort of, like, you know, give it a channel and let it go.
Right.
And did you hear that they're doing shows at the Art Theater now?
I did. Yeah. That's very, very exciting.
Yeah, I'm really thrilled by that.
You know, I hope that's something... I don't want to get sidetracked onto a tertiary issue, but I hope that's something that can be really sustainable for the long term.
Yeah.
You know, that's really, I think that's fantastic.
I haven't been there yet, but I've heard people say that it's like they've redone the whole inside of it, and it's supposed to be really nice now.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Oh, isn't it?
Well, I've been inside, but I haven't actually gone to any shows, but it's absolutely stunning. The seats are comfortable for once. And they have a fantastic sound system. They actually have
great.
A stage. And they're actually doing some interesting events. Like, one of the first ones they did was the with Shay and SMG SAP. Mm-hmm. They did a live soundtrack to, was it Nosferatu?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know about that. That would've been nice.
Yeah. So.
So, yeah. Anyway, I think that, and to tell you the truth, I mean, it's such a big deal, Eno coming to Long Beach. That I think that this may be the sort of spark that really ignites all of this, because we've got Soundwalk here, which is just a huge deal. I mean, people from all over the country know about Soundwalk. I talked to, you know, like Steve Roach. Mm-hmm. You know, he's living in Arizona, and he knows about Soundwalk. Everybody knows about Soundwalk, right? So there's that. And then there's, you know, Cal State Long Beach, and there's your scene, you know, the down... I don't even know what that... Like, it's... It started at Coffee House. Where did that start?
Which?
The thing you're involved in. Like, I know you've been kind of the hub of a little experimental music thing that's going on for a long time.
Well, you know, I mean, it's really funny because I was doing the band thing for ages and ages. Mm-hmm. And when I finally kind of put that aside, I was looking for a new avenue. And I, of course, went straight to Frippatronics. And so I was doing that by myself. And there were a number of places that I did it, but it basically started with the Puka Bar.
Mm.
I had done some other shows by myself, but that was the first one I did with Carl. And, you know, it's great because there's no rehearsal, there's no discussion, we just show up with what we want to bring, and we do what we do together, and it's all about being present in the moment and listening, and... You know, it's really fun, and it has none of the burdens of being in a band, you know.
Yeah.
So, and I think that, you know, what you were talking about as far as, you know, this class that you're teaching, using found sounds and things like that, that's a big part of what we do. And I think that one of the things that I enjoy is trying to find atmospheres, sonic sort of landscapes that people just take for granted and otherwise ignore, but in a different context you can kind of foreground them into something that actually has a lot of significance and power. I think that's, to me, that's really, really exciting.
Yeah.
You know? So, but yeah, you know, the whole, I don't know that... that I'm part of the scene necessarily. I think, you know, we're kind of working together sort of autonomously, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
You know, we're all trying to do something that we care about, and You know, I think that's the more we can get together and support each other, that's all the better.
Yeah. Also, in researching electronic and experimental music, I see that there are these moments in time in specific places where things happen. Like, you know, the whole krautrock scene in around Dusseldorf, you know, when those people came together, and there's examples of that. Even if you go back into classical music, you know, there's a few like-minded people that happen to find themselves in the same spot at the same time, and they started doing stuff, and suddenly it's a scene that, you know, we hear about in history books years later. I just think there's a great potential in Long Beach for there to be an experimental music scene.
Well, I think that, you know, if we focus as a group collectively on this kind of synergy, you know, where if we can get Cal State Long Beach and the Soundwalk event connected, not just sort of in a casual way, but like in a serious way. I mean, if we can bring artists from around the world to come and teach, even for a week, do like master classes at Cal State Long Beach, and then do some sort of installation or something as part of Soundwalk.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing would be really, really exciting. Again, you know, it's all about funding in some ways. But I think there are actually grants out there to support those kinds of activities.
Right.
I also think that bringing Soundwalk events to the students is another opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Even what's going on just in its own right now without bringing other people in. You know, I think that's another opportunity that I think that bringing the students to Soundwalk, that's also another opportunity.
Oh, yeah. Well, I always, every year I have my class meet down there at Soundwalk. And we're going to do that this year, too.
Good, good. Yeah, I mean, for me, Soundwalk is one of the most exciting things I've ever been involved with. Because as an artist, it's really pushed me in directions I never would have gone in on my own.
Uh-huh.
I've always been involved in experimental music, as you know, and we've done stuff together over the years. But for me, you know, a lot of the stuff that I've done is like related to kinetic sculpture, sound-driven kinetic sculpture, which is something prior to Soundwalk I never even thought about.
Yeah.
But once we started talking about it, I remember I went to a meeting before the first event in the summertime, I just, in a flash, my first piece just sort of appeared to me in my mind's eye, you know. So I think that's really exciting, and it's always, to me, so interesting to see how people that I think of as pretty much visual artists come in and bring everything that they have as artists to this new table, I guess you could say. And there's, of course, people that are already, just that's their main focus is sound art in one way or another, but I'm really excited. Now, how come you, as an artist, haven't participated?
I have one good excuse. It's my master's degree. And now that that's over, I don't have a good excuse anymore. So, yeah, I was really working on school for the last, I don't know, 10 years, really. I did my undergrad and then my grad. And then that, in addition to teaching, and then getting the CalArts gig in the summertime, I've just been too busy. And the problem is, for a long time, Soundwalk happened the weekend that I got back from CalArts.
Oh.
But now they've moved it to October. And so I've got more of a chance to do something. Unfortunately, this year I'm completely focused on the Brian Eno thing.
Sure.
I'm doing lots of work on that. So I promised myself that next year there would be something by me at Soundbar.
Good.
Although I'm really not as interested in sculpture. I'm far more interested in performance.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually contacted Shay about doing something in the Dome Room this year. I was planning on doing that, and I guess we don't have access to the Dome Room this year, which is sad. So there's not really a performance space, but I'm hoping to remedy that. I actually talked to him about trying to extend Soundwalk as far as, you know, bringing people to Cal State, because we have a theater there that we can use. But he decided, and I think he's right, that spread it too thin. The Soundwalk needs to be concentrated in that, you know, few square block area.
Well, you know, I think there's an opportunity to... not so much on the same day, but maybe in events leading up to, like Slow Sound.
Right.
You know, that's all leading up to Soundwalk.
Right.
And I think that it's going to do a great job of energizing the community and, you know, that kind of thing. So, but let's talk a little bit about what you actually do as an artist. What do you do as an artist?
Well, what I'm doing right now is I'm trying to put together a band. It's myself, a guitar player, and a drummer. And we're doing early to mid-career Tangerine Dream style music. So lots of sequences, lots of analog synthesis, and live drums and guitar on top of it. And I'm writing all the music so far. And we've had a couple of rehearsals, and it's coming together surprisingly well. It was just an idea that I had, and these two friends of mine decided that they were into it. And it's just working. So as soon as the Eno is over, because that really is taking my whole focus right now, as soon as that has happened, I'm back to it. So that's my...
So do you have a name for the group?
No, not yet. No, we're arguing about that. But we figure we should actually finish at least three or four pieces before we worry about having a name. But it's all geared towards... It's not geared towards studio stuff. Because that's all... You know, I'm a recording engineer. My whole focus has been on the recording studio.
Right.
Because that's where I'm comfortable. Because I don't really consider myself a musician. I'm much more of a producer. But I figure I got my degree in music. I should use it, right? So I'm kind of branching out into doing live performance. And it's, like I said, I'm surprised at how well it's coming together. I'm excited.
It's really fun, man. Yeah. I don't know if you've done any live performance in front of an audience.
A little bit.
It's
a blast.
It's thrilling. It really is. And, you know, it's always a bit like walking on a tightrope, you know. There's always that feeling of... uncertainty, I guess, but there's also that feeling when you do it and the audience sort of goes with you.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing like it.
Yeah.
It's really quite exciting.
Well, everything I've done so far has all been improvised. Every year up at CalArts, Gaylord Mowry, who is he's a very well known pianist. He was one of the founders of the Ear Unit.
Mm-hmm.
And he was head of piano at CalArts for a long time, but he's living in Mexico City now. But he teaches for us at CISA, CalArts, in the summertime. And every year he and I do an improv concert where he prepares a piano, because he was actually a student of John Cage's.
Oh.
And so he prepares a piano, and I mic it, and then put it through all of my gear, my computers and all of my electronics and things, and I process it, and then I add synthesizers to it. And we did that this year, and it came out really, really well. And if you want to see it, it's on YouTube. Just type in Richard Cooper. I just put it up a couple days ago.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
I'll put a link to it
it came out really well. It's very, 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 very fun to completely improvise. I have no idea what you're doing. Set up the environment, you know, set up the technical environment that you're going to have, and then just walk out and sit down and go. It's really fun.
That's great.
But see, now that's not as scary for me as performing pre-written music.
Sure.
Because there's a chance you could screw that up.
Well, you know, but that's also part of it, you know. I mean, you know, when you're working with people that, you know, your drummer and guitar player, mm-hmm. when you're working with those sort of a support group, you could say,
right?
There's always room for, you know, if one person is stumbling, the other person can catch you.
Yeah,
you know?
I think rehearsal is the key to that happening, though. We need to find more time to do that.
Well, yeah. Rehearsal is always the big challenge, and that's really what led me to Ein so far. It's mm-hmm. it's because there is none.
Yeah.
It's not necessary.
Right.
But I think that's and you also you've been doing a lot of over the years. You've done a lot of studio work too,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
You've done composition for traditional instruments and electronic compositions,
mm-hmm.
right? And tell me about that a little bit.
Well, you actually earlier asking about my thesis. So, kind of like Brian Eno, one of my main working methods is to take very simple things and layer them in ways that eventually create complexity. I'm really interested in complexity theory. Complexity theory sort of came from chaos theory, to tell you the truth, the area that I'm most interested in is called emergence theory. And that's the idea that out of simple systems, very complicated patterns can emerge. And my thesis is based on that, where I would start with some very simple little melodic phrases and layer them on top of each other and repeat them. But you know, they're not in the exact same time signature or the same length. And eventually, they would cycle around to make something brand new. So I would use that as an engine. I wouldn't use that like Steve Reich did with his tape loop experiments, where he would take the same thing on two loops and run them at the same time and just let them slowly go out of phase with each other and create new patterns. That's one thing, which is fascinating, but I didn't want to do that. What I wanted to do was to use that as a compositional tool and listen for those patterns that emerge out of that and then write them down and use those as the fodder for my composition. And by using the same engine to create a lot of material and then using that material to write your music, I find that there's a connection between all of the material, but it's not in the same key, it's not in the same time, it's not necessarily in the same anything, but since it came from the same origin, it has sort of a likeness to it. And I found that worked out really well. So I wrote this piece, chamber orchestra piece, for 13 musicians and a conductor. It's called Moray, which, you know, talks to, that's basically the Moray patterns or the visual equivalent of what we're talking about musically here. And it came off really well, actually. I was really happy with it. So, but I'm so glad that's done. Having your thesis behind you was a big deal.
Wow, that's how did it actually feel, you know, after working on it to actually see it perform?
Oh, well, the performance was not perfect, as most first performances aren't, especially with student musicians. Some of them were fantastic, some of them less, though. But that was okay. What I'm doing now is most of what I do when I write for acoustic instruments is I do a MIDI mock-up, right? I do it electronically. And when I'm used to listening to that, every note and every rhythm is perfect. And then I hear the musicians perform it, and every note and every rhythm isn't perfect. But they breathe a life into it that it didn't have originally. So they gave it some element that I didn't even really put in there. And that's wonderful. What I'm trying to do is to capture both of those things, the precision that comes from the computer and the life that comes from having musicians perform it. And I've realized the only way to really do that is to have very, very good musicians perform the work, which is difficult to get because you have to pay them.
Right. Or know really, really good musicians.
Right. I happen to know a few of them, and one of them is Rob Freer, is a trumpet player. I believe, I hope I don't have this wrong, but I believe he's principal trumpet for the Hollywood Bowl Orchestra.
Okay.
He's been in many big orchestras, and he's the head of brass studies at Cal State Long Beach right now.
Great.
And he commissioned me to write an electronic piece for him recently. And so what I did was, instead of writing a traditional tape and solo instrument piece, which is usually what you do when a solo instrumentalist asks you to write an electronic piece, is you come up with an electronic background and then write notes for them to play on top of it. What I did was I created a series of channels leading to various digital delays. And the delays would take the notes that were being played and feed them back at different times, and creating counterpoint and harmony with what was continuing to be played live. So I did that, and it's called Still Water, and that came out very, very well. He's really happy with it. He's putting the album out with it right now, actually. And so I think he's doing the final mixing on it right now, so to speak.
So, I don't mean to get too technical, but so you were using multiple delays, or you were using one delay that had multiple channels?
No, I'm using, within Logic, within the computer, I'm using multiple delays. And each one has this very specific timing. I have some delays that are timed in quarter note, eighth notes, 16th, you know, some of them are measure long, some of them are 5-10 measures long, some of the delays. And what happens is I've written the music out, and the performer listens to a clip track, so he knows where he is in the music. So notes will come back much later, and as they come back, they create harmonies or counterpoint with what he's playing live.
I see.
Yeah.
So then how does the system know which delays to use?
Oh, no, it's all pre-written into the sequence. It's almost as if I was playing a piece of music and he's playing with it, except there's no music. There's just the channels that go to the different delays. So, you know, the first note gets channeled to this delay, the second note gets channeled to that delay, and they all know when to come back. It's all pre-programmed.
Oh, and that's great, man.
It worked out really well. The scary thing about it for Rob is that if you crack one note, it's coming back at you many, many times, and you don't even know when. It could be minutes later that bad note you played is coming back. So, but he's played it about 3 times. He's performed it, and all 3 times he's just nailed it. He's very, very good.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And we did a recording of it, and then I filmed him recording it. And I filmed him with 4 cameras, and then I made a film out of this, and the film reflects the echoes that are happening in the music, so the film is actually being echoed as well, and you can see that on my website if you want.
Right.
Just richard.org.
Richard.org?
R-Y-C-H-A-R-D.org.
Excellent. Fantastic. And so, after Eno, you have the band, any other big projects coming up? Any big Cal State events or things like that?
Well, actually, we've kind of dialed things back because of the budget crisis, actually.
Sure.
So we don't have a lot of stuff that I know of coming up at Cal State. The main focus for me right now is this class that I'm teaching. It's a It's called Composition with Digital Media. We start off by, it's basically you could say it's a class in digital collage in many different art forms. You could also say it's a class on how to steal media. Because what we're doing is collecting found, first of all, images. We work with Photoshop. So they go out and they collect found images, and then they composite them together and they collage them. And you know, while we're doing this, we're studying the history of collage in different mediums. And then the next project they do is they work with Logic, where they go out and they find sounds from all over the place. They can either record them themselves, find them on the internet, steal them off of other people's music, whatever they want. And then collage those together and make a, I call it a digital concrete, because it's basically a digital version of music concrete. Mm-hmm. So they do that, and then I teach them Final Cut Pro, and we do it with video. They go out and they find video, either from archive sites or video, whatever, any video that they can lay their hands on. And I teach them how to collage that. And then the final project is to take all three of these things and put them together, to find images and manipulate them in Photoshop and then bring them into Final Cut Pro and mix them with video and then make their own soundtrack using found objects or found sounds and bring them in as well. So that's really what I'm focused on for the rest of the semester after the Eno thing, that and working on the band. I've always got so many projects going, but I find that if I just keep pushing all of them forward slightly, I get to a point where they all start to happen. It's very exciting.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah. Well, thank you. I really... Oh, you know what? I want to talk about this on our conversation here, mm-hmm. which is I do want to touch base about the CalArts program that you're involved with over the summer. So what's it called?
Okay, it's called CESA, which is California State Summer School for the Arts. And I wish I could tell you exactly how long. I think it's been going on for, I think last year was our 25th, 26th year, something like that. It's been going on for a while. It was the brainchild of this wonderful man named Rob Jaffe, J-A-F-F-E. And he is he's the guy that started it. He's from Sacramento. I forget where he's based out of. I'll get you that information. But it's also called Inner Spark, which we don't usually like to call it, because that was a branding thing. They decided a few years ago that we needed to be called Inner Spark, but everybody there calls it CESA, California State Summer School for the Arts. And what it is, it's a program for gifted high school students in the arts to spend a month completely immersed in their art form. And we have some amazing teachers, and all of our teachers are practicing artists. And they come from all over the country, really. And we teach the music department I'm in charge of now, myself and Ralph Jones, who is our jazz studies teacher. He and I are co-coordinating the program. And we have people, we teach them gamelan, Indonesian classical music. We teach them African drumming and dance. I teach music technology classes. We have sections for composers and sections for string players and brass players and woodwinds and percussionists. Amy Knowles. From the ear unit, she's our electronic percussion teacher, and she brings out her mallet cats and teaches them all about electronic percussion. And it's hard for me to even remember all the different things we do. Paul Burkholz is in charge of our voice department, and he's just an amazing teacher, an amazing vocalist. And we have just so much fun. And so we just spend an entire month living and working in the arts up at CalArts. And it starts right after the 4th of July, so it's usually about, July 7th, 8th, something like that, and it goes for a solid month. So we finish the first week in August.
And it's open to pretty much any high school student, right?
Oh, any high school student can apply for it. But it's not, I run the music department part of it, but we also have, there's a huge visual arts department, there's an animation department, which is actually the CESA animation department is where the two guys met who created Pixar. We have a great dance department, they do sculpture, got filmmaking, there's a whole separate filmmaking department. It's just fascinating, all the stuff that we do. And so we had 75 students this year in music. The whole school is usually about 600, I believe. So about 600 kids in various art forms all living together and working for a month. It's just so much fun.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
I should also mention that that for any students who are interested in this who can't afford it, there's lots of scholarships available. So that shouldn't dissuade anybody from applying.
That's awesome. And you're primarily teaching composition?
Well, I've been the composition teacher there for years. And Martin Herman, actually, who... was the head of the composition department at Cal State Long Beach. He used to be the head of comp at CISA, and I started off helping him, and then eventually he got some amazing commission in Spain, and he had to go do something else, and he couldn't do it, so I sort of slid in there as a composition teacher, and I've been doing that for a while. And then this year, Ralph Jones and I took over as the co-chairs of the music department.
Fantastic. Excellent. Well, thank you, man. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate all the hard work you're doing on behalf of Arts and Culture in Long Beach, man. It's an exciting time.
Yeah, so. It really is. All cool. Right. Excellent.
Thank all you right. very much.
Yeah.